Welcome back to Driving Performance. My name is Tom Shea, the co-founder of Agile Media Group. Today, I am joined by Matt Perry. Matt is the founder and CEO of the Good Chris Company, the maker of canister snacks that taste good and that you feel good buying for your family. The Good Chris Company brand represents three core elements: good taste, good ingredients, and good vibes. All taste, no guilt. The Good Chris Company is no longer just a canister brand, which we'll get into, as they've recently added bagged crinkle cut potato chips to their portfolio. Matt, welcome to Giant Performance.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Yeah, live from Mexico East, the last one, too.
Yeah, right, really, this is really cool.
Do you have any like core memories as you've grown the company with the Expos, East or West?
Yeah, East. Well, East has always been a good show that it's not as busy. You can actually talk to people and all of that, but consequences, it's not as busy, so you don't see a big retailer. So it's a catch-22, but like I've always liked, this is actually, we're not exhibiting this year. I'm just walking the show, and it's good. It's nice to be part of the last one, sort of say goodbye.
Yeah, for sure. And for the audio-only listeners, how would you describe what is happening right now?
I'm sort of in the middle of what is either a very upmarket cool speakeasy, or I'm about to get kidnapped. I'm not sure which one it is, but we're in the back of the truck here. It's really cool. The boxes here, I like it. It reminds me, through college, I used to load trucks at a snack factory and stuff like that. So I've been inside a lot of these. It's bringing back memories.
Awesome. Love it. All right. Well, as we are in a truck, there's going to be a few stops along this route. We're going to start off with founder stories, just going through all the different inflection points and pivotal moments, the nature versus nurture that got you to entrepreneurship where you are today. Then we will go into questions about the Good Chris Company specifically, diving deep on sort of how you've grown it, what you're sort of thinking about as you look to the future. And then we'll wrap up with stop three, which is a game we call the Hot Box, a tongue-in-cheek version of the Hot Seat, where we'll do this or that questions that you'll get rapid fire and respond to.
Okay.
Ready to go?
Ready.
All right, so why don't we dive deep? Let's talk about, take us back to, I don't know, let's go far back before the Good Chris Company. Let's go back to like the college years and the experiences that helped sort of form the genesis of what eventually became a Good Chris.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess if I look back, I've always been an entrepreneur.
Right.
I didn't like that word growing up though. I'm dyslexic, so I could never spell it anyway. I still can't to this day spell words. So I don't know where all the U's and R's and E's go. But as well, sort of in my cycle, the entrepreneurs were always the guys that were all talk, you know, flappy sort of stuff like that. I was like, nah, I don't want to be like that. So I sort of resisted that sort of title a lot. But, you know, if I look back and look, yeah, I always had some kind of angle going on, or selling something or doing something or scheming something. So I think it's always been there. But it was sort of, I didn't sort of formally, but this is my first bit in the Good Chris Company, although I've worked in CPG and food my whole sort of life. I sort of was less about wanting to start a company, more so about having this great idea and seeing that yes, we can create something that people want, and that was enough to spur me to jump into starting my business.
Yeah. And what were you doing before the Good Chris? And you're from Australia.
That's it, yeah.
When did you come to the States?
Yeah, so I've been here for 5 years now.
Okay.
So it was a little while into, we launched in the US 7 years ago, so I ran it for a couple of years out of Australia. And then it was like, okay, if we're serious about this, let's move over here and do it. So,
and did you launch here or did you launch in Australia?
I launched in Australia first, right? So I was part of a company in Adelaide, where I'm from, South Australia, where we imported and sold food. So I was familiar with US brands. I bought brands from the US and sold in Australia. And so it's something where I got to play entrepreneur with other people's money, right? I was launching their brands, learning all of this stuff, things like that. So it was a great background for me. I got to see a lot of things. I got to learn that it doesn't matter if you have the best packaging or the most amount of money. The brands that work were the ones that have genuine product market fit and a need. So that's going back to my earlier point. I knew that if I was going to start something, I needed to find something that had that idea. So I sort of did that, launched the Good Chris Company in Australia. We sold there for a couple of years, but we just got more and more interest out of the US, Whole Foods, things like that. So we launched there, and that business was just growing so much quicker than our Australian business that it was like, right, this is the future.
That's so fascinating. And I think something I'd love to demystify a little bit. So that's like a huge decision. How did you even start thinking about having distribution in the States? What was the test and learn process to realize obviously, like, there's probably maybe a greater TAM and maybe more points of distribution, but what really drove that decision? Yeah.
So just to quantify that, so Australia is the same size as the US with 25 million people, right? So there's more people in California than the whole of Australia. So, yeah, it's insane. America is large population, but not just that. The largest consumer of snack food as well. So, you know, like it's that big sort of thing. So it is, it's just ginormous, yeah. So that's one thing. So how it sort of started for me was, like, I knew the US, I knew about Whole Foods, and the thought was, well, there's all of these retailers out here, like Whole Foods, Sprouts, stuff like that, that don't have Pringles in them, right? Like, so I would be the only canister chip in these stores. So that was the thing that really sort of gravitated to me to think that would be how awesome would that be to get into these stores. So how I went about it was I'd been to Expo West before, funnily enough, we're here at Expo now. So then, right, I'll just grab a table. I was in this dodgy little table right at the back, somewhere in a passageway. I don't know how anyone actually saw me. And we just wrapped up the product, sort of in a sort of US label, put it on the table, and thought, let's just see what happens. And within the first 2 hours, to be honest, I knew that there was an opportunity, whether I could do it or not, or whatever.
Someone did it.
People would just sort of walk past and stop and double back and be like, is that what I think it is? Is that a healthy Pringles? And they start eating, like, this is amazing. There's nothing like that.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, like there's something here. I need to focus on this.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, let's real quick, before we get to the next topic, talk about the inspiration or what triggered developing a Good Crisp. So I knew there was, I think, some diet, looking into the future and starting a family.
Yeah, so I had two girls at the time, three now, but so I had my girls. I had some IBS, you know, stomach issues, stuff like that. So I was cleaning what I was eating, FODMAP diet, stuff like that. So really cleaning up what I was eating. I was like, hey, I'm eating these healthier snacks. Looking at what the kids are eating, it's terrific. We need to give them better stuff. But they could sniff a mile away what a healthier snack was, right? It was chickpea, it looked weird, it tasted weird. And so I couldn't get the kids to eat healthier snacks. They wanted, so I was like, there's got to be a way I can come up with a product that looks like junk food, that sort of, you know, tastes like that, in that sense that it tastes really good, but they don't know that it's healthy, right? So that was the idea. I was like, well, there's nothing more iconic than a Pringles canister and chip. Why don't I try and develop a healthier sort of Pringles? Just spin the idea.
Yeah, and it has no gluten, no egg, no soy, no peanuts, no tree nuts, no celery, no sesame, no shellfish. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah.
So why don't we get into top two, the brand specific questions here. And I want to go back to that same question. Talk to us about the complexities of developing that product, right? Like, if it was easy, this would have existed before. But as you said, usually your brand is not much game in hand. And credit to you for sort of doing such a good job with distribution. I we were talking about this earlier. Every goddamn bodega in New York City, man, all over the place. And that's, you know, the sunburst is staring at me. And the packaging looks so good. The different colors all look so happy together.
Yeah, it's all
time by side. But yeah, talk to us about product formulation and all that went into actually getting this product to market.
Yeah. So what made this tricky is it's not like a granola. Like, I can't mix this up in my kitchen, start at the farmer's market, do it sort of stuff like that. Like, this is it's a processed food. Like, it's runs like first order MOQ, the full shipping containers, truck loads, stuff like that. So it was one of those ones where I think the fact that I had a background in CPG, I had connections already, I could sort of mock up some samples and then take them around and get pre-orders and all of this stuff like that. And then be like, okay, I've got enough. I can go and sort of get my first container worth of product to make it happen. One of the challenges are there's not many people in the world that make canister chips, right? There's literally a handful of them. So that's been a positive and a negative. Like, it's a barrier to entry, but it's also difficult for me to find a good one and the right one. And
usually they don't make canister chips.
Yeah.
It's not. People make the canister. What's more complicated is the actual
structure
of the... Okay.
I mean, Pringles has had such a dominant hold on the market for the last 50 years. Like, they've just owned that set. And so it's been really hard for other brands to get out there and for there to be volume. So, you know, a canister chip line is not like an extruder. It doesn't make a million other things. It just makes this one product. So you don't have a sort of canister chip line hanging around your factory sort of thing. So anyway, we worked through all of that and we're able to sort of develop it. It's been a good thing for us.
Nice. And so you know, the roots are in pastor chips.
Yeah.
Now we're moving to bagged chips.
Yes.
So talk to me about what went into that and the complexities. I think, you know, we'll get back to this, but I know you have a retail first strategy. I know some people who talk about the D2C with the Air.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, it's a light product, but the dimensions of the box don't change. Yep. And so it becomes a little bit tricky. But yeah, tell me about what prompted that move. Is it the future of the brand moving that, or is it a complementary, or is it like a test and learn? So where are you at with that?
For sure. So it's brand new. Like from this recording, it's like 3 weeks old. So the genesis of it was, I mean, if you'd asked me 6 months ago, would we be going into bags and be like, no, we're a canister company. This is what we're going to do. We've got our cheese balls. We've got this. But the more and more I looked at the market and we talked to our consumers as well, I realized that everything out there in the space was kettle style cooked, which is good, but it can be a bit hard, a bit crunchy, cut your mouth a little bit there. No one was doing this, you know, ruffled style sort of products with soft and people melt in your mouth. I was like, oh, that's strange. And then when we talk to our consumers who are families and kids as well, mainly, they're like, yeah, my kids don't like kettle chips, kettle style chips. It hurts their mouth. I mean, you know, they want to eat ruffles, but there isn't a better few ruffles out there. And I was like, well, you know, we've beaten the better for you Pringles, we've beaten the better for you cheese balls, why can't we beat the better for you Ruffles? So we started to develop that up and we made this amazing tasting product. And yeah, we launched it with Sprouts and Thrive. We've got a lot of interest in the market there. And I think for us, it's made us move now from, you know, the great thing is it's not a change in our consumer. It's still all that. It's just a different way of bringing them what we already do. So we talk about now, how can we be the snack of choice or the brand of choice for millennial families? Like when they want a snack, they can get a canister, they can get a bag, they can get a cheese ball, and they feel confident that A, it's got to taste good. That's the most important thing, as you said, our first pillar. And then B, that it's not going to have all the nasty ingredients that they feel good eating. So, you know, whether that's in a bag or a canister, we can still deliver that promise.
So do you, at the time you're speaking, I know the things are always subject to change, but do you think it is essentially a way to make the brand more accessible? Where, like, there is a segment of consumer that doesn't do canister chips. My dad loves canister chips. I personally don't eat a ton. I do eat Ruffles, the rich chips at the time. So do you think it is more of the canister chips are here to stay, and this is more about making it more accessible?
100%. They were very clear about that. Like, our canister business is growing at, like, 40%, has done, will continue to do so. It's a huge part of our business. And a huge demand. Now, we're like 1.5% household penetration on canister chips, so we have still a huge market to go there. But we see this as another extension of our brand and in a different eating format. People, you know, like if you're going to a picnic or a beach or whatever, sometimes it's easy to take a sharing bag. If you're going for a hike or a drive, sometimes the canister is more convenient. So, yeah, we can provide across all those different occasions.
Has manufacturing been easier?
I
know it's still raw. It's still early days.
But I mean, it's made here in the US. There's some easiness about that. We don't have to ship our current products made outside of the country. So there's some easiness there. But we're still learning bags and different canisters and that. So yeah.
All right. So a lot of people who are watching in are launching a brand or aspiring to launch a brand. And so I want to talk about D2C versus retail and the specific strategy you took when you went to market.
Sure. So I started this business, as I said, 7 years ago from there. So even then, back then, the D2C market wasn't as sort of consumer-focused as sort of that has been the last couple of years. So that's one thing. Secondly, my background is selling into stores, grocery stores. That's where my strength lay. So that was our sort of first, we're going to go out into grocery store, we'll get it out there from there. And that was more because that's what I knew. We do a bit of, you know, Amazon and D2C and all of that, but it's probably 5-10% of our business. The majority is through grocery stores. I think that continues to be our focus. A little bit of, you said, of, you know, we've got a product that's a little tricky to ship. It's expensive. Like, it's $40 to ship a box that, you know, costs $30 a product or whatever. So, yeah, there's some challenges for us. But we do an okay job.
What is the most challenging part?
Sorry.
Yeah. What is the most challenging part of scaling and launching retail? Or some things that you know, obviously you had some exposure to it, which I think probably contributes to the success you've had thus far. But there's a lot of people who are going at it, you know, for the first time and don't have that playbook or experience.
Yeah.
What's been the most challenging part of retail?
I think the challenging part is getting, I call it the door, like getting started. Like it is this, you know, a website, Amazon, you stick it up, you put it out there, you turn on the ads, you have, you know, theoretically infinite customers. Obviously, it's not that easy. But with grocery, there's a lot more gatekeepers, right? It's a buyer, he has a review once a year. How do you get there? How do you find them? Who's going to do it? So there is a lot of inside knowledge that you need to crack. I mean, there's ways to do it. There's brokers. There's, you know, talking to other people like myself or what have you. So it isn't impossible, but for sure there is definitely a barrier to entry. It's intimidating. There's rules, there's requirements, there's expectations there that you need to do and meet that you don't have on a deep secret.
And how many doors have you been in?
About 18,000 doors, yeah.
18,000?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That is a crazy number.
Yeah, it's been 17 of us, and 5 of those are
cool reps. A thousand per head.
Sure, I mean, that's the good thing about sort of this side of it. Like the scalability is pretty good. Like we can put on a retailer that's got 1,000 doors. We don't have to increase our team or anything like that. Once we get the core things in place, we can scale.
How do you think about demand planning when there's that many doors? You just like send me as much as you got at all times?
It's tough, right? Because, I mean,
it's seasonal at all.
Summer is good. Okay. Winter drops off ever so slightly.
They were on season one. And you talk about a complex business.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
You know, harvest.
Yes. I mean, yeah, we think more about potatoes than probably the normal person should. So we're guessing about potatoes, the seasoning, lead times. So I think we don't have a lot of like fluctuations in our business, but we do have long lead times, large growth and stuff. So it's tricky. And businesses, as you get bigger, they live and die on logistics, right? It's the most important thing. How much stock am I sitting on, cash flow, all of those things like that. So yeah, it's a big part of our business.
Awesome. All right, so wrapping up on stuff two, I want to close. Something maybe a little more philosophical, but what advice would you either give to yourself before you start a business or just, you know, young aspiring entrepreneurs thinking about launching a business?
Yeah, I think for me, and go back to what we said at the start around product market fit and finding that need. Sometimes we get a little carried away with, oh my goodness, I make this great granola, everyone says they love it. That I should sell it in stores, right? We love our product, but really, why would someone want your granola? What's different about it? Why is there an opportunity here? And I think finding the white space and obsessing about consumer is actually the most important thing. You sometimes think, right, I'm going to start a business, but spend 6 months designing the logo and the packaging and go down that track. And is it an LLC? How am I going to do it? Or it's actually, hang on, like, just people actually want this. What do they want? You never get it right the first time either. So how do you prove out those things in the smallest and cheapest way possible to try and then sort of make sure that you've got an opportunity here? Then you can look to do all that other stuff.
Yeah, it's I agree with you. I mean, I think it's never been easier for something to go viral and to feel like, oh my God, I got something, let's go. But I think the continual feedback, building a community around the brand, listening to input really is what makes them sustainable. So, all right, stop three, the hot box. You ready?
Yeah, I'm hot.
This is a little hot, dude. All right, let's do it. Here we go. Cold plunge or hot tub?
Hot tub.
Beach house or ski house?
Beach house.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
Okay, D2C or DTC?
I mean, I'm a D2C. All right,
there you go. Neat or messy?
Messy.
Corgi or Golden Retriever?
I'm torn because of my English heritage and the Queen, right? But I'm going to have to say Golden Retriever.
Winter or summer?
Summer.
Tennis or golf?
Tennis.
Pineapple pizza or candy corn?
I don't even know what candy corn is, so let's go pineapple pizza.
You remember candy corn?
No.
Halloween? No.
We don't have Halloween in Australia.
Yeah, but you're in Boulder now.
I don't do that much trick or treating. That might surprise you.
That's fair. Live music or DJ?
Live music.
Okay. Sweet snacks or salty snacks?
Salty snacks, my friend.
Salty snacks. Call or text?
Text.
Work remote or work on site?
Ooh. I had to pick one on site.
Okay. Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok?
LinkedIn.
Okay. Dancing or people watching?
People watching.
Cocktails or beers?
I don't really drink, but I'll take beers.
Okay. And you second guessed and second team.
Is that right?
Is that we just done with booze?
Let's go.
Give up bread or give up cheese?
Yeah, cheese.
Yeah. That's sort of a bold statement, too. All right, $50 on red or black?
Black.
All right, start early, leave late.
Start early.
Fiction or nonfiction?
Nonfiction. Nah, yeah. Fiction.
Sure. Playlists or podcasts?
Podcast.
Speak to animals or speak 10 languages?
10 languages. That
was
got nothing
animal.
To say, right?
I don't know. We don't know.
I guarantee they got nothing to say. Well, it's up to find out, right? Yeah. You get that skill and then it's nothing.
Telepathy or teleportation?
Teleportation.
Trucks or billboards?
Trucks on billboards. Billboards on trucks.
There we go. Receive good news or bad news first?
Bad news.
All right, well, the bad news is we're at our final stop.
Okay.
End of our show. And thanks so much for taking some time.
Of course.
Pulling it with us in the back of this truck.
Yep.
I want to give you an opportunity to tell people where they can learn more about yourself, where they can find and learn more about the Bill Chris
Company. Yep. I'm on LinkedIn, as we just heard, but thegoodchriscompany.com. Come check us out. Find us in your store. Buy us.
Think you can follow us?
Yes, of course. So 5% of everything we sell online, it goes to Leukemia Lymphoma Society. Which we are fighting to find a cure for cancer for kids.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.